This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline, Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And as you guys heard in the SportsCenter update extravaganza, courtesy of our very own Kevin Winter, there is money coming out left and right. Someone call the pit boss, baby, because people are getting dumb paid out here. And Chris Canty, who knows a little thing about getting dumb paid in the world of professional sports, joining us here as always.
Yeah, there's different levels to this, though, Gojo. There's what I got paid, and then there's what Corey Seager got paid by the Texas Rangers to the tune of 10 years, $325 million. Ew, that's a whole lot of money.
Oh, that is some hot, stinky cheese right there getting doled out in Major League Baseball. So if you've got the option, I always say, kids, be really good at sports, preferably baseball, and life will be okay for you here. Sound advice. If not, you can always be good at gambling. That's where our next friend comes in here, talking to Tyler Foljam, our ESPN sports betting analyst, who joins us on the Goodyear Hotline right now as a part of our Monday Night Football preview brought to you by Progressive Insurance. And Tyler, I see you, like us, also chose to not be good enough at baseball to get $300 million, so welcome.
I'm so angry at my parents for not giving me the genes to hit a curveball.
That is true. When I think of the history of genealogy and all these things, the ability to hit a curve is going to become that most valuable thing we need to weave in for everyone else here. So, Tyler, since none of
throw one.
Or throw one, or be left-handed and throw one. The holy triumph.
Exactly.
So, there you go.
Since none of us got there, Tyler, let us look north to Monday Night Football here. We've got the Seahawks and the Washington football team, and so many of us are going to be looking at the big picture storylines for Russell Wilson and the Seahawks' future. What do you like for him in this game, especially now just a couple weeks removed from coming back after that thumb injury?
Yeah, for Russell specifically, I think this sets up as an opportunity for him to you know, show that he still is one of the better quarterbacks in the National Football League. I don't know how much that injury is still physically hurting him, but I know if Russ is the rust that he's shown us over the past decade, this sets up for a spot to him to kind of smash. Washington football team is just not a good pass defense. One, they're shorthanded. Their two best pass rushers, Montez Sweat and Chase Young, are out. Chase Young done for the year. Sweat still dealing with that jaw injury. Their secondary has not been good this season all year long in terms of sticking to wide receivers. And Russ has a grown-ass man in DK Metcalf and one of the best technicians in the game and someone who has one of the best chemistries with his starting quarterback in Tyler Lockett. So the avenue for Seattle to put points on the board here is very clear. Throw the ball as much as you can to DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, especially since all your running backs are on the shelf with IR and you're down to the likes of DJ Dallas and Alex Collins. So I see Russ's touchdown prop at 1.5. I would bet that over. Similarly for the game, the script I'm kind of making here, if I think Russ is going to have his best game he's shown us since he's returned, I kind of like the Seahawks side. The total's been, you know, steaming way up. It was 46.5 last night. It's been 47 this morning. It's now 47.5. So a lot of money is coming on the over. So bettors, especially the sharp ones with the influential dollars, are expecting there to be some points on the board. And I think that's going to come mostly from the Seattle side because the steam is heading that side as well. It was a pick 'em last night, and now it's Seattle -1. And I checked it this morning. I don't know how it's changed since then, but this was my philosophy. When I looked at this game, I was like, I don't really like either of these teams. Washington, they weren't that good. Then they've won 2 in a row. Is that for real? Seattle has struggled, but Russ has been out. What's going on here? We expected them to be much better. I looked at the tickets and the money, and the tickets kind of represents the public. About 60% of the tickets were on the Washington football team, because I think the recency bias would say, of course, more people are going to look at them beating the Bucks and beating the Panthers and say, they're better than the Seahawks right now. They're playing at home on Monday night. I'm going to back the football team. However, the money, and that's usually where the sharps are, where the influential people were this morning, almost 70% of the money was on the Seahawks. So the sharps are thinking that, whoa, 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 I know Seattle's not looked good and Washington has, but before this season started, Seattle would have been favored by a field goal or more in this spot. Now, things have happened to change that perception, but again, Russ is back and healthy enough at least to start. So I'm on the Seattle side. I'm going to label him with Seattle. I think Russ has a big day in terms of getting the ball in the end zone, scoring points. We know the distribution is concentrated there. It's either going to DK Metcalf or Tyler Lockett. So I would tell you, if you have a conviction about one of those guys, the grown-ass man or the technician, play the overs on receptions and receiving yards, especially anytime touchdown for one of those two, because I think they're likely to get in the end zone. I just don't know where it's going to go. I don't know if it's going to be a DK game or a Lockett game. It's usually they kind of alternate. It's hard to tell. But I think one of them is going to have a big game here with six or seven catches for about 100 yards and a touchdown.
Tyler, what does your projected game script mean for Taylor Heinicke and the skill position players for the Washington football team in terms of player props?
Yeah, I like Heinicke to throw an interception. I was surprised to see the interception prop at just a half because Heinicke has thrown 9 interceptions in 10 games played this season. I think that will happen here. The price is only juiced to -130 on the over, so I think there's some decent value there. And with me believing the Seahawks are going to win this game, a turnover always helps that, obviously. So I'm thinking that comes from Heinicke throwing the football. It's a good matchup, though, for guys like Terry McLaurin and any other wide receivers. Logan Thomas might be back, the big tight end who has been a nice target for Heinicke. So I think they'll try and throw the ball on Seattle, even though they have a healthy Antonio Gibson, J.D. McKissick, and Jarrett Patterson there. Neither of these defenses allows much rushing production. So that's why I think Seattle is going to, even though it's against Pete Carroll's DNA, lean into throwing, and Washington might try and bang Antonio Gibson a little bit more. And hopefully if that plays out, then Seattle has the edge there. But I think we can see Terry McLaurin have a decent game. I think Heinicke, though, might turn the ball over once or twice and help Russell Wilson at Seattle offense with some short fields.
Tyler, go work on hitting the curve, and we'll talk to you next week. We appreciate the time as always, friend.
No problem.
Tyler Foljamar, ESPN sports betting analyst, kind enough to join us here on the Goodyear Hotline. And that Monday Night Football preview is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Insurance for motorcycles, boats, and RVs. For protection on the road and on the water, see how much you can save in as little as 3 minutes at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. And as he mentioned, Chris, according to Adam Schefter, the Washington football team officially activated Logan Thomas to the 53-man roster for tonight's game against the Seahawks. They also elevated center John Toth from the practice squad and placed their offensive tackle, the rookie Sam Cosmi, on the reserve and injured list here. And I know trusting in Taylor Heinicke is probably a fool's errand at this point. He's very much, I think, going to reflect kind of the Ryan Fitzpatrick experience ahead of him. But, Chris, where are you at on trusting Russell Wilson at this point heading into tonight's game?
Well, I trust him based on that he has with that secondary. Now, what I will say for this Washington football team defense is they played a lot better since the bye week, and that's a staple of Ron Rivera coach teams. In the second half, they're a lot better than in the first half, and they haven't allowed a team over 300 total yards of offense, and that's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers offense and the Carolina Panthers offense. So it feels like that group is trending in the right direction, but they're still 30th in the National Football League in pass defense and 32nd in touchdowns allowed, so they're dead last. But the only secondary that's worse in terms of yardage than the football teams is the Seattle Seahawks. So for Taylor Heinicke, I think there's an opportunity to get some mileage in that passing attack. And it seems like he has a lot of chemistry with the receivers. And you mentioned Logan Thomas coming back. We know that guy can be a matchup nightmare in the middle of the field. So, yeah, this is going to be an interesting ball game. I don't know if I'm as bullish on Seattle as Tyler seems to be. I feel like there are a lot of good things to like about what the football team has done recently, even with the injuries to the pass rushers, Chase Young and Montez Sweat.
Yeah, I'm with you, Chris. I don't have a lot of faith in the Seattle organization at this point. I think we're in sort of the death rattle of what has been the Pete Carroll and the Russell Wilson era in Seahawks uniforms. I don't think both of them end up back here next season. And a loss tonight, I don't think it's going to be the difference maker one way or the other. But man, oh man, we're going to start to be able to write that future more and more in pen if this thing goes south of the Seahawks on Monday Night Football. So we've got that situation to worry about with this quarterback. Coming up next, though, we will look at what appears to be now a week-to-week referendum on the future of one young quarterback in the NFC East. We'll take the temperature in Philadelphia next here on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. As we look at the future ahead of the Seattle Seahawks and what to expect on Monday Night Football, we'll talk to Mina Kimes, our ESPN NFL analyst and obviously diehard Seahawks fan, in about 10 minutes for the weekly therapy session on this show. But before we get to that, Chris, right now we'd probably be doing therapy for our former producer Cliff, who's no longer here at ESPN with us, unfortunately. We miss him dearly. But
hell no.
For him today, it might be a good day to miss, because the Philadelphia Eagles getting beat by the Giants would have been a tough one to come to this particular show about.
Yeah, that game was a bad zone for the Eagles. Like, after we've seen what they've done over the last month or so, and this team trending in the right direction, and more importantly, Jalen Hurts trending in the right direction, like, we felt like this team was in prime position to compete for one of those wild card spots in the NFC. Like those three wild card spots, clearly the Rams have a stranglehold, but the sixth and seventh spot, those feel like those are up for grabs in the NFC playoff picture, and the Eagles were in position as of last week. And so to come out and fall flat against a three-win Giants team is not what everybody was expecting. For Jalen Hurts to have the kind of performance that he did yesterday, that really is unacceptable. I mean, that was a miserable performance by him. And, you know, the red zone pick at the end of the first half, 15-play drive over 90 yards, and to end that possession the way that he did, rather than settling for the 3 points and going into halftime tied, I think that's one of those mistakes that immaturity can cause. And so you're hoping that he grows out of that and he doesn't have those lapses in judgment. And so that's the thing that bothers me about yesterday's game. But the one positive that you can say is, even with the turnover margin being what it was, Jalen Hurts still had the ball on the plus side of midfield with a minute to go and an opportunity to win a football game. And it just so happens that Jalen Reagor decided he was going to let him down with two drops in that situation. But I mean, the loss yesterday is inexcusable for Nick Sirianni and his bunch, because clearly they're a better football team than the New York Giants, and they allowed a team from a talent standpoint that's inferior to them to best them, and that's got to be disappointing for all Eagles fans.
It does. You mentioned some of the decisions made by Jalen Hurts. Here was the Eagles quarterback after the game in their presser talking about if he tries to do a bit too much at times.
No, I don't think I ever try and do too much. I just think I should have just took what they gave me at times. Simple as that. Took what they gave me. You know, like I said, the situation before halftime. They didn't give us what we were looking for. Just throw it away. Let's save it for a field goal. Get 3 points, 3-3 going into halftime, and you know, doing that. And even on the long pick where I checked out of it and got to a play, I mean, just taking what they give me underneath, doing that. We got to that later on in the game, put ourselves in a situation to win the game. I mean, every drive we had the ball, to be honest, in the second half, with some things that we just have to be better on, and it starts with me.
Cannon Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio, brought to you by Fidelity Investments. And Chris, I don't feel bad saying this. I don't think this is hot takey. This isn't just a reaction to the Giants game. But everything we've seen about the Jalen Hurts tenure so far in Philadelphia, and what we know is a one-year trial for all this, leads me to believe he is going to have a long career in professional football, but I believe it's going to be as a high-end backup. I don't think this guy is going to be the future of the quarterback for Philadelphia Eagles, knowing what they've got waiting in the wings as far as picks coming up this year. And just based on what we've seen, he is a remarkably steady and mature individual here. He is a quarterback that can help you out a ton with his ability to run the football. He is a great and competent rusher of the football, and he is an adequate passer of the football, but he is not a guy I believe you turn the reins over to of your franchise going forward if you're Philadelphia.
Well, here's what I will say to that, Mike. I think anytime a team has multiple first-round draft picks and questions at the quarterback spot, there's going to be a higher degree of scrutiny on the incumbent, which is Jalen Hurts. So everybody's going to be looking and saying, you know, can we afford to pass up on one of these quarterbacks coming out of this year's draft, or pass up making a run at one of these veteran quarterbacks that wants out of his current situation? Like, is the opportunity cost too great to stay with Jalen Hurts? And I think that's ultimately what ends up being the conversation. But I look at Jalen Hurts and say it's going to have to be a very specific style that the Eagles organization has to commit to on the offensive side of the ball in order for them to have success. Like, it's going to have to be the kind of commitment that we've seen from the Baltimore Ravens when they're going all in on Lamar Jackson and playing that brand of football on offense, having that scheme, a quarterback-led run game, and then a complementary pass game in order to be able to move the football. And so if the Eagles don't see enough from Jalen Hurts in the second half of this season, in the last month of the season, to make that kind of commitment with all of the draft capital they have in the next couple of years, then you're right. They're probably going to pull the plug on Jalen Hurts. I would just say this. I think that there's a lot to like with him, and the things that he has to improve on are things that most young quarterbacks have to improve on, which is being able to anticipate their throws and being able to throw guys open from the well. Those are things that Jalen Hurts has struggled with. Those are things that he can absolutely improve on. But the fact that this team is in contention for a playoff spot – in a year where the roster would suggest that they're rebuilding under a rookie head coach, you have to feel good about what Jalen Hurts has been able to do. And so I'm more optimistic than you are about Jalen Hurts' future as a starter in this league and about his future in Philadelphia.
Yeah, Chris, I see what you're saying about the long-term investments, but the quarterbacks you mentioned, we can throw Josh Allen in there as well, the way Buffalo went all on him, they're markedly more talented quarterbacks than Jalen is. And that's my biggest thing is if you've got the opportunity to go out and spend more capital on a more talented player and build in there, what Jalen does is good. I think he's going to play in the NFL for a long time, but he is not talented enough as a player for you to mortgage that kind of future capital on to build around in the ways that you talked about them doing with Lamar and Josh Allen, who you could see those are understandable gifts that you would try and do a little more, especially with a first-round tag on them.
Mike, let me ask you this question. And the guys that are coming out in the NFL draft at the quarterback spot, like, are you pointing to a guy that you feel like is markedly better from a talent standpoint that will represent an upgrade in the short term for the Eagles at the quarterback spot over Jalen?
I could see that with someone like Matt Corral out of Ole Miss. I think a more talented college quarterback, maybe certainly not a more accomplished because we know Jalen's got that going out of style. Mm-hmm. But I think with him, I think with Kenny Pickett, some of the jumps you've seen this year, you could get me to buy into those guys as more talented passers of the football than Jalen Hurts is right now.
Yeah, and I think that's what it'll come down to, the conviction that Howie Roseman, their general manager, has in how much of an upgrade those quarterbacks coming out next year are over what they're getting from Jalen Hurts. I think that will ultimately be the deciding factor. But I'll also say this. If Jalen Hurts finds a way to get this Eagles team into the playoffs, then I think he's bought himself an opportunity to be the starting quarterback going into the 2022 season. There is no doubt about that in my mind. Like, if Jalen Hurts finds a way to get this team into the postseason using the formula that they've used over the course of the last month and a half or so, then there's no way that Jalen Hurts isn't the week one starter in 2022.
Lots hanging on what feels like every week's performance for the young Eagles quarterback and for Jalen Hurts and for the Eagles. No doubt this weekend a massive step back. Coming up next, though, we'll find out what the path forward looks like for Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks. We'll do that after this word from Indeed. Now, if you're a business owner, you know that hiring's become increasingly difficult in recent months. So why not make it a bit simpler? If you want to easily attract, interview, and hire quality candidates, then you need Indeed. With tools like Instant Match on Indeed, just sponsor a job post and you'll immediately receive a list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your job description. Then invite them to apply right from your Indeed dashboard. To get started today by visiting Indeed.com/credit. Mina Kimes joins us next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And to help us digest a little more of an NFL Monday around here, we head out to the Goodyear Hotline to talk to ESPN NFL analyst Mina Kimes. She's part of NFL Live Monday through Friday, 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio, as well as the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny wherever you get your podcasts. And Mina, we will get to Monday Night Football's matchup involving the Seattle Seahawks team that you're a fan of, but I want to start with the Los Angeles Rams team that you've been a part of the preseason broadcast booth for and certainly know pretty well being out there in L.A. Is Matt Stafford the thing that we point to here as we look at them struggling in the middle of this season?
Well, it's hard not to point to him given that the Rams traded everything they did for him and that his turnovers are probably the single biggest factor why the Rams have lost these last few games. But this is a team failure, on both sides of the ball. I think with Stafford, what makes it difficult is we're hearing these reports about the injuries. And when you watch him, some of the mistakes in terms of the, I would say not just the turnovers, but the inaccuracy, missing some of the open receivers are just so unlike what we saw early in the season that it's kind of hard to explain. And that's not to absolve him, because I think we saw some bouts of inaccuracy in Detroit as well. But it just makes it all the more perplexing why the offense is stagnated. But I also think the run game doesn't look very intimidating. And then, of course, defensively, you're seeing kind of just the role players not really stepping up the way they did last year. And offenses sort of following a similar blueprint in terms of targeting the linebackers and having some success running the ball against them too.
Meaning one of the more shocking results in the Week 12 slate around the NFL had to be what the Bengals did to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Are we witnessing the unceremonious end to the Ben Roethlisberger era of Pittsburgh Steelers football? And if that's the case, then what direction should this franchise go to when they talk about pivoting on the quarterback spot?
I think this is undoubtedly the end of the era. Probably should come a little bit earlier, although they didn't have a lot of cap space to work with or a high draft pick. But the question of what to do next is complicated by the fact that we are, heading into a draft. There aren't a ton of quarterbacks who are kind of pro-ready, so there's some question marks about teams' ability to even trade up for an option. And once again, there's like not a ton of cap space next year either in Pittsburgh. So it's kind of hard to figure out what the path forward is going to look like, especially since I don't think anyone thinks Mason Rudolph is it there either. So I feel like, with the Steelers, there's going to be a little bit of a rebuild and maybe just take some shots at quarterback, whether it's later in the draft, whatever free agents become available, and see if you can kind of try to compete with your defense until you found the solution under center.
Ken Engel Jr. talking to Mina Kimes on the Goodyear Hotline. Speaking of defense getting things done here, Mina, we talked about the Rams version of the game that we saw yesterday. On the Packers side, with Rasul Douglas and what we've seen performance-wise from them, do the Packers have a legit claim to being the best team in football right now?
I think that they do. I think between them and the Bucs, it's pretty close, I would say, in the NFC. I think the Packers have the advantage of our awareness, the fact that a bunch of their best players, the advantage is awareness. Let me just put it simply. Some of their best players are still injured. They're coming back. So, when you look towards the playoffs and you realize guys like Za'Darius Smith and Jair Alexander and David Bakhtiari might be coming back by then, it suddenly makes the Packers all the more imposing, given the fact that they've already looked extremely balanced on both, offensively and defensively as well. I mean, they have done what the Rams did not do in terms of getting contributions from role players, and it's a testament to their scouting, their coaching, and really just the whole franchise looks extraordinarily competent, which, as you guys know, is not something we can say about a lot of teams in the NFL right now.
Mina, switching gears and looking at the AFC, the team that just keeps rolling along and winning games, the New England Patriots, 6-game winning streak. Mac Jones has arguably his most productive game as a pro. How deep of a run can this team potentially make in the postseason?
I think they can make a very deep run. I think that they could go to the Super Bowl.
Wow.
A lot of that has to do with the level of competition. You've got teams like the Tennessee Titans and Ravens that are just so banged up, whereas if they were completely healthy, it might be a different picture. You've got a team like a Buffalo, the Bills team, that we're probably going to see next week, is going to have some trouble matching up with New England, especially both running the ball and against the run. And then you've got the Chiefs, and I think that's the biggest threat right now for them in the AFC, given how much they've improved on defense in recent weeks. But the Pats have, I've said, the highest floor of any team in the AFC, and a coaching staff that over the course of, several weeks has really figured out how to not only optimize their rookie quarterback, but also use all of the personnel they've acquired through the draft and in free agency.
All right, Mina, I've held off on it for most of the segment this time, since usually we start with the Seahawks and you're upset with us. And so now we're going to finish with them instead here. Seattle, Monday Night Football tonight. We know this Washington football team defense has looked better, especially starting, I think, all the way back at the Kansas City game than it was at the beginning of this year. But do you think this can ultimately be a spot where Russ and this offense have a get-right game?
I do think so. Part because I don't know if you can get much more wrong than how they've looked in recent weeks. But I think that offensively at this point, while Washington has been playing better, there are still weaknesses, especially I would say in coverage, that Seattle can exploit. I think they're fully aware of what Washington's game plan is likely to be going into this. I expect Washington to blitz on early downs and try to keep everything in front of them on third down, where Seattle's been so unsuccessful. And then on the other side of the football, yes, the Washington defense has been playing better, but so is Seattle. And while they don't match up super well with Washington in terms of the football team's reliance on play action and screens. I think that they'll be able to get after Taylor Heinicke and maybe tempt him into some interceptions too.
Going to be an exciting matchup to watch tonight here. See if Russell Wilson puts out any more creative social media content before we get to game time here. Always a pleasure, Mina. Thank you for joining us. We'll talk to you next week, friend.
Bye, guys.
Mina Kimes, you can catch her on NFL Live. And again, download, subscribe, and review the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny wherever you get your podcasts. Coming up next, though, let's dive a little more into that team that Mina Kimes said could be a legitimate Super Bowl contender in the New England Patriots, as the path really cleared out perfectly before them once again. What else is new here? Canny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio. What you doing? Where you at? A question that the Oklahoma administration probably asked Lincoln Riley when he wasn't answering their calls during the late hours of the night and early into the morning. Canny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canny. That had to be an awkward one, Chris. I did have to laugh, though, and we'll talk more about this college football move that rocked everybody's world here shortly. But I did see this quote from Oklahoma President Joe Harris. I hope I'm pronouncing that name right. I'm probably not. My apologies. But he says, he admits that, quote, "We would have liked more notice coming after this summer and the announcement about Oklahoma's departure to the SEC and the way that that unfolded. I understand angry Oklahoma fans that they have technically got now multiple years of notice, allegedly, but you all know how that went down. That quote sounds very rich in that context.
No question about it. But you know what had happened was on the PJ, they didn't necessarily get the best cell phone reception.
Yeah.
So that's why Lincoln Riley couldn't give their AD a heads up in the school more notice when it comes to him making a decision to take the job at Southern California. But I mean, listen, you can't turn down unlimited use of the PJ for you and your family, 24/7 access. I mean, that's just one of those things you can't turn down. And on top of that, they're going to offer you $500,000 over ask on both of your cribs out in Oklahoma. I mean, I understand why Lincoln Riley made the decision. And from a football standpoint, again, it feels like there's an easier path to the college football playoff at SC, given the talent base that's around the school, than there would be at Oklahoma, knowing that they're going to the SEC.
Yeah, so we'll get to plenty of this.
And
some other rumors that are flying around college football right now. Silly season's doing silly season things, and we'll start to put out some fires here. Now, reminder, tune into the ESPN Daily Podcast, bringing you a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters, presented by Supercuts. Download, subscribe, and review ESPN Daily, available wherever you enjoy your podcast. Chris, another weekend has come and gone. And my oh my, the Patriots just refuse to stop winning here. They started this stretch of games that we said the next four games would show us a lot about what the ceiling looks like. Is this a high-floor Patriots team? They started that off. It was going to go Titans, Bills, Colts, and Bills again in the next 4 weeks. They get a 36-13 win over the Titans that looked flat-out dominant. And, Chris, this seems like a team that, as Mina Kimes just told us in the last segment, seems more than capable of finding their way to the Super Bowl this year.
It's crazy to think that this team started 1-3 in the first four games of this season. And had it not been for an overtime loss at home to the Dallas Cowboys, we'd be talking about the Patriots riding an eight-game win streak. But again, Mike, I told you this last week, and I told you that the week before, and I'm going to say it again because it bears repeating. This Patriots team is the team that I trust the most in the NFL in terms of what I'm going to get from them from week to week. Why? Because I trust their formula for success. And it's very reminiscent of the 2001 Patriots, where it's all about their defense, it's all about their run game, and being better than anybody else in the NFL when it comes to situational football. Over the course of their six-game winning streak, defensively, they got 17 takeaways and a plus 13 turnover margin. And that's the best in all of football by plus seven. So think about that. Their third and third down percentage, giving up the third fewest red zone touchdowns by an opponent. And opponents are averaging 0.97 points per drive, which is by far and away the best in the National Football League. And then offensively, they got the most first downs. They're top five in third down percentage. They've got the second most red zone touchdowns, and they're tied with the Raiders for the most pass plays over 20-plus yards. Like that is who the New England Patriots are. So we got to start accepting the fact that this team is going to be capable of making a title run, and you wouldn't think that when you're talking about rolling out a rookie quarterback, But Mac Jones has shown a maturity at the position beyond his years. And I think it's, again, it's reminiscent of what they got in the early years of Tom Brady in terms of him being able to manage the game and make the plays that are there to be made in the passing game. Now, there was one throw he missed in the end zone to Hunter Henry yesterday. But outside of that, it was a near flawless performance. And so if he's doing that, if he's dealing the way that he is and that defense continues to be opportunistic and taking the football away, then this Patriots team is going to be a tough out.
Yeah, Chris, the only interesting one, because we saw the Colts this past weekend gave the Tampa Bay Buccaneers hell. And I think matchup-wise, they're similar formulas, right? We saw Tampa have to run all over them to win. Leonard Fournette started to look like the dude that we saw in the postseason last year. And on the other side of the ball, you're going to have to deal with an offense that can certainly try and beat you in the same way as New England. You've been beating everybody else. But I feel like they're a little more built for that. It's going to be, can you go out there and put this on the Bills like that? Can a team who's capable of that high-flying passing offense, like we've seen with Kansas City, like we've seen in Buffalo, just be a different matchup fit that gets you in trouble? I don't think it's going to be. Not based on what we've seen from the Bills' inability when defenses take away that big play from them to succeed underneath. I think at this point, this New England thing's not a fluke. They could lose one of the next four games here, Chris, and it really isn't going to change my opinions much of this team. Outside of health becoming a factor, this thing's built to run. This thing's now a crockpot team. We can set it and forget it. This is a playoff team and likely a deep run playoff team waiting to happen.
No question about it. And as far as the matchups with the Bills and the Colts are concerned, their next two games, I'm not at all worried about what we're going to get from the Patriots. I mean, the Bills, they choose to be one-dimensional on the offensive side of the ball, and they have a young quarterback, and Bill Belichick has shown that he's giving young quarterbacks fits. The same with Carson Wentz. I mean, Belichick is going to take away what you do best, and for the Colts, that's the run game and Jonathan Taylor. They're going to force Carson Wentz to beat them, and based on what we've seen, when teams have put Carson Wentz in that situation, he has not been able to deliver, and the two turnovers yesterday ultimately are what allowed the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to actually climb back into that game in the second half. So, yeah, I believe in this New England Patriots team, and I'm going to have to be proven otherwise in terms of my confidence level and their ability to keep stacking wins and being able to put themselves in prime position to make a run at the Super Bowl.
And it pained me to have to, Chris, not celebrate Matthew Judon and another great play from him, more great play from him in this game, just because he came out with some of the most problematic Thanksgiving food takes on earth. I want to celebrate guy, but he has taken himself out of that discussion with things that he said about mac and cheese.
No question about it, but you know who's put themselves in the discussion for one of the best defensive players and maybe the best cornerback in all of football? That would be one J.C. Jackson. I mean, what he did to Dontrell Hilliard yesterday, punching that football out, Jalen Mills recovering it before it goes out of bounds, and then the interception in the back of the end zone and a red zone possession for the Titans, like, that's big-time plays. Like, J.C. Jackson, I don't think he's getting enough love for being one of the best cornerbacks, just one of the best defensive football players in the entire NFL. Like, we're going to have to start paying a lot of attention to him. And keep in mind, back when the Patriots were rolling in the early 2000s, they had a cornerback by the name of Ty Law that had some of those same type of attributes, that same knack for being able to come up with the timely big plays. So that's why I'm bullish on this Patriots team, because I've seen this formula for success work for Belichick in the past.
Coming up next here, let's head back to college football and find out if the SEC finally meant too much. That's next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.